The summer of football at 8 o'clock right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
To be part of a great team, here's Hilton blitzing off the slot again. Passer Hopkins, oh my goodness. Did he catch that? Did he catch that? That's the touchdown catch of the year.
Shotgun snap. Swing pass. Left side throw into the screen 20. Got a block 25. Into space 40.
And he's
Todd Gurley hits the jet midfield.
He's gone.
Todd Gurley 20. 10. Gurley for MVP. Touchdown LA.
Early stages, second quarter. Popped up in the air. Intercepted. Eddie Jackson. Jackson is still going. Another defensive highlight. Touchdown Bears.
The summer of football.
Rob gets it. Hands off to Sony Michel. What a hole down the right side. 10-5. Touchdown. Sony Michel rips off another big one. This time for 38 yards.
Breaking into open field and on the run is Josh Adams. Josh Adams inside the 30 and the 20 and the 10 and all the way home for yet another super run.
Here's Barkley, big hole, left side 20, he's to the 30. Avoids the tackle down the far left sideline. They can't catch him. 10-5. Barkley high steps it across the goal line. 92-yard touchdown run.
The Summer of Football with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
This is the Summer of Football here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So glad that you're with us. We turn now to a Pro Bowler, NFC champion with the Chicago Bears. And don't forget, he's going to be in season 2 of Luke Cage, a show that I enjoy on Netflix. It is Thomas Q. Jones, and he joins me here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Thomas, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, brother. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm so looking forward to season 2 of Luke Cage. Love season 1, obviously, but man, it takes a long time. I grew a long beard waiting for season 2, but finally it's here, right? Oh.
Yeah, it's finally here. It's available on Netflix, all 13 episodes. And last season was a really good season, but this season is even better. I think all the fans will be in for a treat. There's a lot of interesting twists and turns this season that I think will be very entertaining for the fans. So yeah, you can actually watch it now. It's all 13 episodes on Netflix.
So Thomas, tell me about Shades and Comanche. I know they're two good friends of yours. You playing one of those guys in Comanche. Tell me about these two characters.
Well, Shades and Comanche in the original comic book, they were two guys that were a part of a gang called the Rivals, which included Shades, Comanche, Diamondback, and Carl Lucas. And they ended up going to prison, and Shades and Comanche were in prison with Carl Lucas, and Carl Lucas decided to go straight, and Shades and Comanche wanted to, stay on the, other side of the law. And so we ended up getting in a fight with Carl Lucas in prison, and we beat him up really bad, almost killed him. And that's what put him in the prison hospital, and they ran the experiment on him, and that's how he ended up getting his powers. So Shades and Comanche have been, they're like, best friends. They're together all the time. And in season 1 of Luke Cage, you could see, if you go back and watch season 1, the fourth episode, the origin episode, you could actually see the episode where Shades and Comanche, Shades is played by Theo Rossi, and I play Comanche. We beat him up. In season 2, Comanche gets out of prison. So now Comanche and Shades are back on the streets and, back up to no good.
It's going to be really interesting to watch. Again, season 2 of Luke Cage comes out on Netflix, and Jonathan Hood talking to Thomas Jones on ESPN 1000, ESPN app. Thomas, were you into Marvel Comics, or were you into graphic novels when you was coming up?
Oh, as a kid, I definitely loved comics, and I wasn't too familiar with Luke Cage, but I was. I would watch Super Friends and all those cartoons. I was into Iron Man, Daredevil. All of these as a kid. They had these superpowers. They're just really cool. I really like Green Lantern. I liked him with his ring. I mean, there was you know, as a kid, those things are just fascinating. And once they started turning these comic books into, you know, Netflix started turning them into series like this. I mean, it was very interesting because it was like, how do you take a comic book and make it into like a real live drama? And I think that's the special thing about Luke Cage is, you know, you've got this guy that, you know, is a hero, but he's in Harlem. He's in a really cool place with a lot of history and a lot of nostalgia, and they add all of that into the comic book world, which I think is very creative. Shout out to Chael Coker and all the writers and producers on the show. It's a very unique show, very unique.
Thomas, I find it interesting the money that's made by Marvel and how these comic book / graphic novel characters come to life. It's almost like every time you turn around, there's an opportunity to make money with this because people are really invested in the story. They love reading it, obviously, as a kid and as an adult, but then to see the actual characters, there has to be something to that because I think it's very lucrative, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, you've got diehard fans. You have diehard comic book fans, and they. I mean, as I got older, I didn't read the comics as much, mm-hmm. and like I started paying more attention when Netflix started, you know, producing these TV shows, and I was definitely interested when Luke Cage came out because, you know, he was one of the first black superheroes, and I was mm-hmm. definitely interested in that. But there's a lot of money in this industry. There's a lot of money. I mean, these people at Comic-Con. You know, these events where, you know, people from these shows can come and do appearances and sign autographs. I mean, you know, if you're, you know, Mike Coulter or, you know, one of the lead actors from, you know, one of these films or one of these shows, I mean, you could, you know, probably make up to $250,000, at a year just going to comic cons. I mean, that's how much these fans are invested in these characters from the comic books. And that's why it's very important to make the show, you know, at least as comparable to the comic as possible so the fans don't feel disconnected.
Thomas, what did you enjoy most about the process and what it takes to act? What do you like most about it?
What I like most about acting is when I retired from football, I didn't really have anything that was as intense. And I'm kind of one of these thrill seeker people. I think that's why I played for so long. Mm-hmm. I like the adrenaline rush of football, and I think what I like about acting the most is this is the only thing I can think of that gives me a real time adrenaline rush. When the director says action, it's kind of like the ball being snapped. When the quarterback says sit hot, everything is laid out for you. You've gone over the game plan. You know what the play is. You know what it's designed to do, but you don't know how it's going to turn out. You have to live it. Same thing with a scene. You have the script, you have the notes from the director, you understand your character, your backstory, but when the director says action, you have to live it. And I think that's what I like the most about acting, is that it gives me something that I can be in this real-time, living-in-the-moment space that I missed about football.
Season 2 of Luke Cage comes out on Netflix, and Thomas Q. Jones, former Bear, with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You left the game relatively healthy, did you not? I mean, you left the league pretty unscathed, and I'm wondering, are you doing your own stunts? Are you that healthy that you could do your own stunts for the most part?
Well, I wouldn't say I left healthy. I would say I left, you know, on my own 2 feet. So, mm-hmm. But I definitely didn't leave healthy. There's a lot of health issues that I have from playing football. I mean, I played 12 years in the NFL. I had over 2,600 carries in the regular season games. That's not counting practices, playoff games. My body is pretty beat up, but you know, I try my best to do as much cardio as possible. You know, to keep my weight down. I don't lift heavy anymore. I lost actually about 20 pounds since I moved to Hollywood about 4 years ago, just so I could slim down because I didn't need all that weight. I played at 225, 230, and plus sometimes when you're that big, you know, you get typecast. You know, they'll cast you for similar roles over and over again, and I'm a real trained actor, and I like to play different roles and different characters. As far as doing my own stunts, in season 1 of Luke Cage, we had a couple of fight scenes, and I did some of those, and then we had a couple of other stunt guys come in for me, Mike Coulter and Theo Rossi. They played Shades, and obviously Luke Cage, Mike Coulter. And this season, I didn't have any major stunts to do. But I have a film that's coming out in October called A Violent Man, where I play a mixed martial arts fighter. And I had to fight Chuck Liddell and Stephen Dunleavy. And I did my own stunts in that, and that was pretty intense. So I'm healthy enough to do my own stunts. but, you know, if I don't have to, I don't want to. So
I hear you. Well, none of those injuries and you banged up, I didn't notice any of that when you was in being Mary Jane. It's funny, I didn't notice any of those injuries.
That was a little bit different. That was a different type of physicality there. So, I kind of shook off those injuries for those scenes.
Well, I guess so. Well, for those that don't know, Thomas was a recurrent actor in Beery Mary Jane, the show that's on BET with Gabrielle Union. Very few men will ever get that close to Gabrielle Union. So you got to tell me what that experience was like, because I got to live vicariously through you through all those scenes.
But, you know, first of all, you know, it's funny because people see those things on TV and you know, they have all these different questions, you know, are you really, you know, do you guys really like each other? Is it real? Are you really, I mean, and the funny part about it is it truly is acting. You know, I mean, we're both professionals. Gabrielle is one of the best in the business, extremely professional. I mean, at that time, I was very, very young in the industry. You know, it was maybe my first year. Well, my second year as an actor, and she was very patient, and you know, we were able to, you know, get through, you know, the material, and we just had a really good connection, a really good chemistry, and you know, the funny thing about those scenes is, you know, you see it on TV, and it's just me and her, but around us, there's, you know, five people holding lights, there's five people with cameras, you have what's called Video Village, which is off to the side, there's big monitors where the executives of BET and Viacom are all sitting there watching the shots. You have the director. We've got about 30 people watching. So, you know, it's funny when you see it on TV and it's just, you know, the two people that are in the scene, but when the director says cut, I mean, there's all these people around. So, you know, I mean, it was a great experience. You know, obviously it was a welcome to Hollywood moment because some of my first work was pretty much with no clothes on, but you know, it got me prepared for what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I don't even want the dog around me when I'm in action when I'm doing that. So for you to have 30 people around, man, that's tough.
Yeah, it's but you know, that's the thing. You know, it's all about, you know, living the experiencing what the characters experiencing to bring it to life on the screen so the fans and the audience can believe the storyline and be entertained.
Thomas Q. Jones, former Chicago Bear, with me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We're talking about Luke Cage Season 2 on Netflix. If you have not seen it, please get a chance. Go back to Season 1 because that was tremendous. And then get a chance to see what Thomas Q. Jones does in Season 2. Shades and Comanche, that should be really the hallmark and one of the major storylines for Season 2 of Luke Cage. Last time I talked to you, we were talking about Brian Urlacher, and we got a hold of you talking about Urlacher going to the Hall of Fame. Where does he rank amongst the best defensive players that you play with in your career or against?
Oh, he's in the very top two, possibly the best ever. You know, I've known Brian since college. We were both All-Americans. We made the Walter Camp All-American team. We were at the College Football Awards in Orlando. He was up for the Jim Thorpe Award, and I was up for the Doak Walker Award. So we met in Orlando. And then we just, you know, all these All-American trips that we took and these press junkets and things, we became really cool. And there was, you know, obviously we went to the Bears, and I was two picks ahead of him, went to the Cardinals. So when we finally had a chance to play together at the Bears, I mean, it was an incredible experience because I was already really good friends with him. And then to see him get inducted to the Hall of Fame first ballot, I mean, first of all, he's representing our class of 2000, number one. Number two is one of my really good friends, and I wish the best for him. Number three, I mean, he's one of the all-time great defensive players and to ever play the game. I mean, just hit from his size, his speed, his tenacity, his competitiveness, his leadership, just his personality. You know, that's the thing about, like, you know, when in the locker room and when you're just talking to him, hanging out, you know, he's just real kind of soft-spoken, funny guy. You know, he's always cracking jokes and you know, laughing at himself, laughing, and then all of a sudden he gets on the field and he turns into a totally different person. And, you know, I'm always fascinated by people like that because I'm a very intense person when I'm working all the time. Even if I'm at practice or my game, I have the same kind of energy. I don't know how to really turn that off. So to see somebody like him go from being this jokester to this savage, it still kind of blows my mind sometimes thinking about it.
After being in Tampa for a year, Thomas, what were your expectations when you came to Chicago? You're looking for a place to be. What were your expectations coming to the Bears?
Well, I was excited because I grew up as a big Walter Payton fan and a Bears fan, and watching them win the Super Bowl in 85 and watching the running backs, Neil Anderson and Walter Payton and Matt Sui. You know, I used to have Tecmo Bowl, and I would always play on Nintendo when I was a kid, and I'd always play with the Bears. I mean, you know, it's one of the most storied franchises in the NFL. So to be able to go to Chicago and play running back, the same position that Walter Payton played, someone that I grew up, you know, admiring, was an honor. And then playing in a city like Chicago where there's such diehard fans and you have so much support. I mean, I played in Chicago one time before I was signed with the Bears when I played for the Cardinals. I played in a preseason game, and it was one of the most horrifying places to play. Very intimidating, very intimidating place to play. I remember that my rookie year. And I expected to go there and win a Super Bowl. I mean, I think that's the goal, you know, with any team, but it's definitely the goal in Chicago. I mean, you know, no matter what highlight clips you see of any type of Super Bowl promo, they always show the 85 Bears, you know, show Mike Ditka and Buddy Ryan getting hoisted up on the shoulders. And, I mean, that's what you want to be a part of. So that was one of my goals for sure.
Well, now the Bears have gone to a different way because they have a new head coach in Matt Nagy, who was with Kansas City as an offensive coordinator under Andy Reid. And I think that the theme that we have talked about so much about the Bears is just trying to get the offense jump-started with a second-year quarterback in Mitch Trubisky. So what do you think what does it take? Because you've been there and I have not. So you have to tell me, what does it take to get to the Super Bowl on, you know, both sides of the football, people on the same page? What is it going to take? Because the Bears have been away from it so long. They haven't been there since you were there with the Bears. So what's it going to take for them to get, you know, finally get over the mountaintop?
It starts with the team leadership. You know, the good thing that we had was we had offensive leaders and defensive leaders. And we took control of the team. I mean, the coaches and management, they can only do so much. Obviously, they put the team together and they come up with the game plans. But ultimately, the players have to take control of the team. And once the players take control of the team, that's how you create the chemistry. And then once you create the chemistry, then you start to create good luck for yourselves on the field. And that's what we were able to do, you know, because we took over the team. You know, we, you know, policed everyone, made sure everyone knew what they were doing. They were in their playbooks. They were spending as much time as they possibly could in the weight room, in the training room. Whether, you know, if a guy on our team wasn't doing what he's supposed to do, he was the butt of the jokes. You know, I mean, there was just a very, very, very low tolerance for people that didn't do what they were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it makes everyone want to contribute in some capacity. So I think that's where it starts. It starts with the players, you know, on offense and defense. And guys, you know, becoming, you know, leaders on both sides of the ball. And then what happens then is the coaches, they start to respect the players, and they don't feel as though they have to coach the players as much. They just have to guide the players. And I think that's with any franchise. You know, it starts with the players. I don't know who the veteran leaders are in Chicago, but I'm sure they have, some veteran guys there. And, I mean, that's where it starts, man. That's where it starts with any team. If you want to get to the, because to get to the Super Bowl, it's not just about luck. You know, you have to have all of those things. You have to have luck. You have to have leadership. You have to have discipline. You have to have mental toughness because it's a very, very long season, ups and downs. There's a lot that goes into getting to the Super Bowl. And I don't know, like I said, who those veteran guys are, but those are the guys that are going to be responsible for helping them get back there.
Thomas, last thing I have for you, I appreciate your time. After you retired from the league in 2011, I just think that that the league has changed some for the better and some not. Even with your projects and all the things that you're doing, I know that you still have your ear to the ground about what's going on in the National Football League, because what has happened now is that sports has crossed over into politics and vice versa. So there's so much question marks about the league and with players and how they look at what's going on in our streets. How do you view the league, and how different is it from when you retired to where it is now under Roger Goodell?
Well, I think the league is different now because, you know, the world is different now. And I think, you know, the NFL is based off entertainment, and it's a fans league. So, you know, I think as the world evolves, the NFL has to evolve. When I came in 2000, there wasn't no NFL network. There wasn't really the internet. I mean, you know, there was no social media. You know, so things were a little different. Things could be kept behind closed doors a lot more. Where now things are more in the open. You've got social media, you've got Instagram, Twitter, you know, the NFL network. You know, you've got constant NFL news. So it's impossible to keep other elements of the world out of football when, you know, the NFL is exposing themselves to that. It's funny how a lot of people are surprised when athletes speak out on other subjects. But, you know, these people that the people that are watching the NFL players are constantly talking about them. So, you know, it's definitely different now than it was when I played. But, you know, I applaud the players for using the platform to speak up for things that they feel they need to discuss, you know, social injustices and things of that nature. It's a very huge platform, and it's a powerful platform. And I think if people would actually just, you know, listen to what the issue is as opposed to judging who the person is and their perspective, I think we could come to a common ground. Unfortunately, some people don't want to do that. You know, they don't want to take in account that someone else's experience and someone else's life is totally different than theirs. You know, the one thing I like about football, especially sports in general, is it brings cultures together. And a lot of guys that are in a locker room, you know, we're all, no matter where we come from, we're all working towards the same thing. We're going through the same struggles in training camp, same struggles during practice, same struggles during the game. You know, whether you have a white lineman blocking for a black running back, a black lineman blocking for a white quarterback, whether you have a black defensive lineman, you know, trying to keep the guard off of the white linebacker or vice versa, you know, we're brothers. And that's the epitome of what I think the world should be. And, you know, and I like I said, I applaud the players for sticking together and speaking out on certain situations because, you know, football is just a microcosm of the world. That's really what it is. It's a microcosm of the world. And if the world could be like a sports team and unified like a sports team, I think things would be a lot better.
Well, Thomas, all the best of luck in season 2 of Luke Cage. Again, you can find it on Netflix. And are you part of Corbin Nash that's in the UK? Are you a part of that as well?
Yes. We shot that movie in 2016. Corbin Nash, it's a really cool movie, vampire flick about a rogue cop that tries to stop these vampires from killing everyone in the city. Really, really great cast: Malcolm McDowell, Rutger Hauer, Dean Jagger. He's the lead. He's actually in South Africa working on an HBO show right now. Corey Feldman is in it as a vampire. You know, and people remember him from Lost Boys. Yes, a really good cast. So I play Darius in the film, and yeah, it's on demand. I mean, it's on Amazon, iTunes. They just released it in the UK, so it's over there as well. Corbin Nash. I have another film that comes out called Andover, July 17th. That will be on demand as well. It's about a scientist whose wife loses her life in a pottery accident. It's a dark comedy. She loses her life in a pottery accident, and he's a scientist, so he tries to clone her to get her back. So he keeps trying to clone her over and over again, and he keeps getting the wrong one. So it's a dark comedy that comes out July 17th. I'm in that, and my film will be out October 17th in theaters called A Violent Man. So, yeah, I have a lot of things I'm working on. Actually, tomorrow night, if you can tune in to NBC tomorrow night at 9:30
Eastern?
Pacific time.
9:30 Pacific time. Okay.
Pacific time, yeah. And I will be on the Marlins show on NBC. It might 9:30 Eastern time. I get these times all messed up because I'm in L.A. and, you know, these times come on different other places. But tomorrow night on the Marlins, there'll be I'll have a guest star role on the Marlins show on NBC. It's a comedy, Marlon Wayans comedy, so it's going to be a hilarious episode. So it'll be on tomorrow night as well. So I'm working on a bunch of different things, man, and I'm really happy with where my career is going, and you know, I'm just trying to keep making progress.
Well, obviously, me and so many Bears fans are happy for your success, you know, post football, and I think it's great what you're doing. I hope that we can continue to connect, and so we can promote your stuff, so people know where to find you. But that's Marlon shows tomorrow, 8:30 Central Time on NBC5. That's where people can see you on the Marlon show. So that's got to be hilarious if Marlon's involved with it. So that should be
interesting. It is hilarious, and I really appreciate you. Reaching out to me and constantly, you know, staying connected, because I mean, I think it's important as well for the fans, especially, you know, Chicago Bears fans, to see their former players, you know, successful after football. And because when you play for a team like the Bears, you never lose that connection ever, especially when you play for the Bears and you make it to the Super Bowl or the playoffs. I mean, there's always that connection. The Bears and players and the fans, there's a special connection there. And I'm in Hollywood, and there's so many Bears fans in Hollywood. There's Bears fans are everywhere. I mean, I'm one of the only athletes that lives in the middle of Hollywood. The rest of the players, like the Rams and Chargers, they live outside of Hollywood and Inglewood and a little bit further out. But I live right in the middle of Hollywood. And everywhere I go to this little dive bar usually once a week just to kind of just hit the reset button. And the bartender is a huge Bears fan. So I think the Bears, because I get free drinks every Tuesday. So I think the Bears fans and the Bears organization, because they give me free drinks every Tuesday. He's a diehard Bears fan. And we literally sit there, and for an hour we talk about everything. I mean, he'll ask me questions about the Super Bowl. You know, he'll ask me questions about just playing for the Bears. And it's kind of the same conversation, but it's just so intriguing because it's the Bears. It's the Chicago Bears. So I appreciate you reaching out to me and all the Chicago Bears fans on social media for reaching out and congratulating me on everything. I really, really appreciate that.
All right, Thomas. Again, it's season 2, Luke Cage on Netflix. And again, we will make sure we link up and let everybody know about the rest of your projects as well. And as always, we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, brother. Bear down. I appreciate it.
All right. Thomas Q. Jones, former Bear, Pro Bowler and NFC champion with us on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone.
Hey, yo, Jay Hood. Talk that barbershop talk, dude.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
It's time for Tales from the Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Jonathan Hood with you. So glad that you are with us. Don't forget tomorrow, another full show, 7 to 10 right here on ESPN 1000. We'll get a chance to really break down what's going on in NBA free agency on that show. And Antonio Daniels, former Spur, will tell us his thoughts on what Kawhi Leonard might be thinking. We'll hear from Sekou Smith from NBA TV. Long time guy on this show. I remember having him on 10 plus years ago. Sekou Smith will be on the program. And so much more tomorrow, 7 to 10, right here on ESPN 1000. Tales from the Hood, by the way, is brought to you by Northwestern Football, Chicago's Big Ten team. Join Coach Fitz and the Cats. They've got a tremendous home schedule. Get your tickets early because it's going to be lit. It's going to be a lot of interesting games at home for Northwestern. NUSports.com, NUSports.com for tickets and information about Northwestern football and their home schedule. Should be interesting season for the Cats out of Evanston. Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. Let me start with this first story. Plane forced back to JFK after pilot mistakenly reports hijacking. So a JetBlue pilot accidentally reported that his plane was being hijacked at JFK, triggering a massive response of cops and firefighters who surrounded the craft on the tarmac. The pilot of Flight 1623 bound for Los Angeles, tried to punch the code alerting JFK's tower that the craft's radio wasn't working, but inadvertently hit keys that signaled a hijacking, law enforcement sources said. So without verbal contact, the flight 1623 and the manually entered code for hijacking authorities, JFK had no other choice but assume the worst, right? So the Port Authority Police, its emergency services, K-9 units, firefighters, ambulances, they all rushed to the scene. The incident caused a ripple effect of delays in landings and departures as first responders rushed onto the runway. So Flight 1623, with 158 people on board, was scheduled to leave at 7:30 p.m. and land at 10:52 at LAX. It finally took off at 11:23 and arrived at 2:28 in the morning in Los Angeles.
Oh, that sucks.
That guy should be fired.
Yeah, you do get fired for your job if you do say something like that. That's wild.
Passenger Tony Schwartz tweeted, I'm on a JetBlue flight at JFK that lost its communications, created a security crisis. 10 heavily armed cops boarded the plane and just left after an hour and a half on the runway being towed back to the gate. Wow. Because somebody put in the wrong code.
In this day and age, too, you can't make those mistakes. There's no excuse for that.
Felix, there's no way that guy should still be employed. I mean, that guy couldn't even give away the tickets at the gate. That guy couldn't even clean around the airport. Not even a broom. You won't even trust a broom in that guy's hand.
No, not at all.
And, of course, for those of you saying, well, we all make mistakes, that's a huge mistake. People could have died. It gives craziness in that.
We all make mistakes.
Not that kind of mistake, pal. That's brutal. All right, on to the next. Doctors remove live worm crawling under a woman's face. Have we done this story, Sean? I feel like I've done it.
It sounds familiar.
You know what? You know what?
Maybe it's another woman.
No, it's not. With the other woman.
It's an epidemic of crawling worms under faces.
No, I know this. You know the story from? This is Bleck's story from Friday night. The rare Friday night appearance I made. He did this story.
Remember that story? Oh, God.
So for those that missed it, we got to give the story again because it's still relevant, still out there. It looks like they've updated the story, so let me just give this. A Russian woman bugged by a strange lump on her face, if you pardon the expression, was even more shocked to discover the cause of a live worm. According to the New England Journal of Medicine, the 32-year-old woman first noticed strange nodules below her left eye that later moved above her eye and then down to her upper lip. She told doctors the nodules appeared after she visited the rural area outside of Moscow. And, you know, she told NPR that 20% of the cases, the worms could move considerable distances, such as from the upper eyelid to the buttocks. Even worse, the worm could live there for 2 years in a human body if it isn't removed. So, yeah, look, the picture here is so gross. I won't even tweet it out. I will save you your dinner. By just telling you that there's a woman here that looks like she had major Botox surgery on her lips. More than normal, but the only difference is it's not Botox surgery. There's a worm in her lip.
A living worm.
Yeah. Yeah. I want you just to envision that. You're sleeping and all of a sudden there is a worm in your lip. Right. Brutal, right? On to the next. I know it's gross, but I just want to share that with you on Tales from the Hood. Oh, man. Okay, how about this guy? A man charged after running in underwear on Atlanta airport runway. It's like something out of a movie I'd see on TV1 on a Sunday afternoon. So a teenager has been criminally charged after running half naked across an Atlanta airport runway and jumping onto the wing of a Delta Airlines plane that had just landed. So officials on Wednesday said that Jaren Jones, who's 19, conducted his escape after scaling a 12-foot high fence topped with barbed wire at the Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, the world's busiest, that previous afternoon. So police took about 5 minutes to apprehend Jones, who had been barefoot and wearing only underwear after being alerted by an airport employee. What can stop a person from jumping a fence?
There are plenty of laws to deter activity. Unfortunately, they don't stop activity. So Jones was charged with criminal trespassing, public indecency, causing damage and obstruction of law enforcement officers. Bond was set at $18,000. Jones' lawyer did not immediately respond to comment on this. Onboard passenger Tim James recalled his fear at the sight of Jones on the wing, attempting to rip open the emergency door of the plane that had just arrived from Miami. Oh, people were crying. My first thoughts were that he jumped off the plane, so I was more concerned that he had something else on the plane that needed to be taken off. It was scary. Oh, God. He actually got it open until the stewardess and the people inside the aisle started fighting back. You know what? Can I tell you something? When I hear these plane stories like this, thank God I have the ability to drive where I want to go, right? And that, of course, there's more hours, but there's less chaos in my truck than it is on an airport. I mean, like the whole story what happened with Ryan Hollins. He's just chilling with some of the big three people, and all of a sudden, a dude makes a left turn. He's like, "Yeah, I'm out of here," while the plane is in flight. What are you doing, man? Like, don't you feel safer in your car than you do in flying, Davis?
There's nothing wrong with seeing this great country from the road.
All right.
Nothing wrong with it. Look, I feel like if the ride, that 10-hour ride down 57 connecting to 55 was enjoyable as a kid, it can be just as enjoyable as an adult. And you don't have to use the pickle juice bar this time. You could actually stop at the gas station and relieve yourself.
You are really such a sage individual. It really does make sense, though, what he just said, ladies and gentlemen. It is enjoyable on the road. All right, on to the next. Felix, what do you have?
All right, my story comes...
We appreciate Felix coming in.
There's always a delay with my mic, right? That's what it seems like.
No, it's not the mic, it's your brain.
It's
not you. And plus, you're doing the show for me from Russia. So
World Cup, baby.
So we appreciate we understand, we apologize for the delay, as there is that delay between me and Felix as he's producing the show from Russia. Please go ahead.
All right, here we go. Ontario man scores second lottery jackpot in 2 weeks. An Ontario man who won $104,516.35 lottery prize said his shock was compounded by the fact that he had won $75,000 just 2 weeks earlier. Mr. Power, 57, told the Ontario Lottery he bought the poker lotto all-in ticket on a whim June 21st, and he ended up winning that $104,000. When I saw the words big winner on the screen, I couldn't believe it, Power said. I really couldn't believe my luck that I had just won that $104,000 and 2 weeks prior to that, $75,000. The lucky winner said he has plans to use his winning to take a Caribbean vacation and save for his retirement. Now, I pull out a lot of these lottery news, and it surprises me how many people get lucky. I think it's time, Jonathan, for us to go as a team and just show up to small towns and start buying lottery tickets. This luck is just tremendous. We got to do one on a Sunday morning before church, as we've read in stories before. We got to do some random ones and just all get a whole bunch of power tickets. Because in Chicago, you ain't winning it. You got to go to a small town.
Man, that's so true.
Southern Illinois, baby.
But that is just 100% true right there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What Felix Reyes just gave you, ladies and gentlemen, is truth. We are just going to give you a path to riches. What you do is, if you're going to play the lottery, don't do it at the local gas station. They never win. Don't do it at what used to be the old white hen pantry. Don't do that. Not at the liquor store. I'm going to play my number. Give me that scratch-off ticket. Give me 1-2-5-50-50.
You mean there's no luck over at Kenwood on Stony?
No, there's no luck. No, there's no luck there. You ever see a big check in the ceiling there? No. No.
The winning ticket taped to the window.
No, you don't see that. You have a $4, $5. I'm telling you right now, you drive as far as you can south or far as you can north. Go to some place you've never been and then play the lottery there. Don't play it in city limits. Go someplace where all of a sudden Susie, you know, Susie Q won the lottery. She's from, you know, Chicago, but she won it at some, you know, at some convenience store, some, you know, some jewel or whatever, you know, way downstate in Tuscola.
Hey, Jonathan, during basketball season, during college basketball season, you're in a lot of small towns.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to get some lottery tickets, my man.
Okay. Well, next time, I'm in Rochester, Michigan with the Oakland Golden Grizzlies. I certainly would do that. I'm also in Detroit, too. I know I can't win nothing there. My goodness. You know, the saddest thing in Detroit, as well as a lot of things, it's sad in Detroit, and I got family there, so I can vouch for this, is people at 9, 10 in the morning, where they come out of these vans, and there's like 100 wheelchairs just rolling out with people in it with the oxygen tank. I say, I'm going to win something today. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. You ain't winning nothing. Don't give your money away. Go to a smaller city in Michigan. They try that. Try those casinos, but not in the heart of the city. And the same thing in Chicago. You ain't winning nothing here. Go on down to, like Sean said, down to SIU, around that area. See if you can find something.
Effingham.
You know, you don't want to go that far. You know, try. I wouldn't say Urbana, but maybe Champaign. Maybe they could help you, that's for sure. All right, Sean, on to the next.
All right, last night on Under the Hood, on Tales from the Hood, we gave you the best way to get out of a date, Drake version, getting out of a date with Tiffany Haddish. Today, we give you the best way to get out of a TV or radio interview featuring Richard Jefferson, who posted on Instagram via note, "It is with great remorse that I am writing this. After many years as a peer and many years as a friend and teammate, I have decided to end my friendship with LeBron James. I am saying this publicly so that the fans and media members can please stop asking me where he's going in free agency. I don't know, my family doesn't know, and neither do my kids. Unfortunately, I live in Los Angeles, so the questions are unavoidable, but hopefully this helps to clear things up. Truth be told, I never liked the guy. He works too hard and makes the rest of us look really bad. He's my son's favorite player, and I view that as a complete betrayal of how hard I've worked to put a roof over his head. I'm sorry I'm having to give this Drake response, which is hilarious, but I feel like this is the best way to address this issue that I'm clearly losing also. I wish everyone the best of luck in free agency, teams, and players. And oh, to Channing Frye also, just because he hosts the podcast. He's the co-host of his podcast show, The Road Tripping Podcast. But yeah, that was one of the funniest ways to get out of doing radio and TV interviews during free agency time.
That's that. That is hilarious. I love that. I love that. And it's a wink at the whole Drake Tiffany Haddish thing. And for those of you on Twitter don't know who Tiffany Haddish or Drake is, You know, get out of the sports pages for a second and live. Find out who Drake is. He's at Toronto Raptor games. Come on, and Tiffany Haddish is usually at L.A. Clippers or Laker games. It's part of pop culture. You know, start getting used to it. And that is Tales from the Hood right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. We'll hear from Jesse Rogers on the Cubs and the Dodgers at the top of the hour as you're listening to Under the Hood.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.
We will preview the Cubs and the Dodgers with Jesse Rogers live from Chavez Ravine in Los Angeles, California, getting his thoughts on Yu Darvish as well. Also, we will hear from Bobby Portis, the Chicago Bull. He's got a great basketball camp in Johnsburg in July. We'll tell you about it at 9:35. All part of the mix right here on Under the Hood.
Hey, yo, Jay Wood, run that back. Give them the info they need.